May 15th, 2013, Advanced Sankirtan Training, Toronto, Ontario, Canada.
For the Lord, he gives his love. And for the devotees, he gives a friendship. And for the innocent, he gives mercy. And for the atheists, for those who are inimical and against the idea of Krishna consciousness or God in general, he gives upeksha, or indifference. He goes around and leaves them alone. So we're meant to distinguish, while we're out distributing books, we should be looking for the ripe and unripe. And for the ripe ones, we give as much mercy as possible. And for the unripe, we're not meant to spend so much time engaging. And that causes a lot of friction also. So if you're a little more selective, rather than trying to convince everybody. Now, obviously there's people in between and you can't always tell in the beginning. But the more expert we become, the more we'll be able to tell who's ready and who's not. And it just takes experience to do that, just like with a good gardener. Yeah.
So what do you do with someone you think is right at the beginning, but then when you talk with him, you realize he's totally unright?
Same thing you do with a fruit, and you pick it and you think it was, you don't put it in the basket, you just drop it and go on. In the nicest possible way that you can. Yes.
Sometimes, it's just someone who is he has his ideas of religion. I mean, I want you to comment on what I'm saying. Is it right sometimes to try to preach to him so that he can understand a little bit
yes,
more?
Yes, it is, and that's why I say it requires some discrimination and finesse. I present this ripe and unripe, especially for devotees who are beginning, because sometimes there's a lot of anxiety that I'll have to be expert to convince everybody. But if you're more selective in the beginning, then it will relieve a lot of that anxiety. But as you become more expert, then you'll notice that there are ways in which, through your expertise in your preaching, for somebody who's not totally against the idea, but may have a few arguments and so forth, if you're a little expert, you can actually convince them to take. And there are a lot of amazing reversals that take place. And so, no, it's fine. We're out there to preach. But you have to refine your discriminatory powers as you go forward to see who's actually interested and who's not. And after a lot of repetition out there, you start to see that people are affected by the modes of nature in various categories. And there are a lot of similarities between people in these different groups. And that kind of helps. We don't prejudge anybody, but we do become more efficient how we deal with all kinds of people according to the mode they're in. So our mood is that we are Krishna's instruments. And so when we go to present a Krishna consciousness, you don't have to be in anxiety, we just have to pray to Krishna to be his instrument and to distribute the knowledge and ask him to please use us to achieve that. We must remain humble and hungry. And one thing about preaching Krishna consciousness is that when we do meet people who ask questions and may require a little bit of extra work, it brings us, we come home hungry because we want to learn more about how to effectively present to other people. We may get questions that we can't answer right away. And that's good. It's a good thing to feel that you have more questions than answers. After a good hearing and chanting session, it's nice to have more questions than answers. That leaves you in a ready state to take in more. You want to hear more. You want to seek higher association with people who are realized and have discussed these things thoroughly, threadbare, and can answer these things. So preaching requires that, and humble always, because that is what allows us to stay open to Krishna's mercy. Next. So we go out for self-purification. So remember that when we're going out, it's a kind of a yajna, a divine yajna, tapo divyam. It's the perfect kind of yajna. As we were just hearing, Prabhupada was saying, this is a very quick way to make advancement. Here's Damodar distributing the book through a second-story window. in Montreal. You can see the reflection of the Rath Yatra cart in the window. That man was kind of waving as the Rath Yatra crate was going by, so Dumbler climbed up on the air conditioning duct, and he was able to successfully sell a book through that window. Anyway, we do service for service sake. And I save one soul at a time, beginning with myself. On the airline, they'll tell you, before you put the mask on your child, put it on yourself. And if you go to paramedic school, they tell you, a dead paramedic can't save anyone. So you have to make sure that you save yourself before you rush into a place and try to save everybody else. So it's really important to keep yourself fit spiritually at all times. And our prime directive of leaving everyone with a good impression begins with treating people with respect. We should respect everyone. Offer kind words. They go a long way. In all circumstances, think how you can offer kind words to people. And teamwork is very important. When we work together, there's a kind of synergy, and we feel strength working together. Here we have a really tight team, and that helps us to stay encouraged and not feel like we're just alone. And express gratitude and thank people that you meet and associate with. This is good for all circumstances in your ashram, brahmachari ashram. Appreciate the association you have. Thank the devotees you're with. And in grihastha ashram, in the temple community. Take time, you know, if you see a devotee working hard, sweeping the floor, manning the desk, or working in the front office, or coming back from sankirtan. One word of appreciation to that person can really make a big difference. I can still remember when I first started going on traveling sankirtan. I drove down to Los Angeles with my traveling party, Banabhata Prabhu. We were new brahmacharis. We landed in L.A. And Hridaya Nirmaraj had just taken sannyas. And he saw us pull in, and he came over to the van to greet us. Told us how we were doing such a high service and really appreciated it. And coming from a senior devotee who we had just met, we became so inspired just by that he took the trouble to do that. So if you go out of your way to inspire people and show them appreciation, it goes a long way. Preaching means giving. Don't be condescending. Don't think we have all the answers, we have the best thing in the world. Appreciate that other people have their dedication according to their time, place, and circumstance, and honor them for the progress that they have made. Express empathy. Prabhupada says, Krishna says in the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that the best kind of yogi, atmalpangena sarvatra, he or she shows empathy towards other living beings. In other words, appreciates that other people are suffering and feels for them. It's not just that, well, you're not your body. Mahamuni Prabhu was telling me, actually, there's a story about Mahamuni. He had the flu when he was in the Brahmacharya ashram, and he moaned because he had such a high fever. And one of the new brahmacharis said, Prabhu, you're not your body. And he rolled over and said, Prabhu, you're not my body either. And so, you know, although, you know, we're supposed to be transcendentalists and such, we should also appreciate, you know, that people do suffer, they do hurt. And we should show empathy and appreciate that. I remember I was in Vrindavan when my father died, and I got a telephone call. And I had a heavy heart, you know, really hurt. And one of the devotees came over and gave me a big hug. And I just, actually a few devotees did. And the fact that they, you know, they could have just said, you know, he's not his body. You shouldn't be attached, you know, he's just your father. But it did hurt. And they took time to empathize with that. And I always really deeply appreciated it. It helped me heal faster. And I always thought more highly of those devotees. So we should empathize with people, appreciate what they're going through in life. You had a question? One point?
trying to find the way to say it. Like when let's say you meet someone who is let's say Christian, and you talk about God and you see that they are very doing nicely with their with God, you know, they have a relationship and they. But the fact that we know that the fact that they eat meat is very bad. So like if you could happen that this person have this connection with God, you're like, wow. But you kind of want to make him understand that you cannot eat meat and do all these things. It's kind of stopping you to become even more connected to God. So what do you do? Like you kind of break their enthusiasm and tell them, well, you're doing this, this, or you just kind of...
Well, in the Gita, Krishna says that there may be people who are ignorant, but we shouldn't discourage them, but we should encourage them to act in the spirit of devotion. So people don't suddenly make a U-turn just because we tell them that they're a Maya or something like that. So it's best to engage people, be empathetic, to present to them what we have when there's an opening, give them what they can assimilate at the time, and let Krishna do the work. You know, we have to give according to the openings that we have. Okay. Practice reflective listening. You have to be a good listener. That really helps in all kinds of circumstances and relationships, and even when we're on sankirtan. To listen to people, what they're saying, and you can hear something about where they're really at if you listen carefully and not just try to tell them everything. Make people feel special, they are. So imagine that everyone has a sign around their neck that says, make me feel special. Just look around the room for a second and imagine everyone has a sign around their neck that says, make me feel special. And then how would you act upon that? If everyone you saw had a sign, and they actually do, you just can't see it, but there's a sign around everyone's neck, they want you to make them feel special. If you go out of your way and make them feel special, then they'll respond in a very favorable way. And this is one of the techniques for approaching people anywhere you go. Find out something that's special about them. Every living entity is unique. And if you make them feel special and appreciate them, then there'll be a fantastic response. So we're going out as ambassadors of goodwill. Prabhupada came to America as an ambassador of goodwill, an ambassador of the spiritual world. We're going out to represent the sampradaya. And sampradaya means to give the complete gift. That's what sampradaya actually means, the bequeathment, giving the complete gift. And we're passing it on behalf of the previous acharyas and on behalf of Krishna. So this is a great and honorable service to be engaged in. So Prabhupada himself encouraged us that if we just present the books on their own merit, that people will take them. And it's really true. So here's a little bit about selling the Bhagavad Gita. Now, when I give these this template, this is just some parameters that you can begin with. And those of you who are already distributing, you can just kind of see how I've organized this. It's not that everything is linear and you have to present like this all the time, but I'm just giving some guidelines that are tried and true. And by following these guidelines and this system, you'll have some success. And then you can innovate after that, once you develop a confidence from using some of these things. And some of you who are already distributing and already have your own techniques, you may have a different way of doing it, but that's okay. I'm just giving some basic ideas that have worked throughout the years. And here's how it goes. Radar. So radar is a system for discovering from a remote place how fast people are going and something about them through getting a reading In other words, the radar bounces off a moving vehicle, for instance, and it comes back to the little device that the policeman's holding, and then he can tell how fast you're going. And we have that ability also in our hand. Hold up your hand and point it at somebody. This is your radar. There's power in your hand. Hold it like this. Comes right, the beam for the radar comes right out of the palm of your hand. Come on, try, hold up your hand. Try. It's kind of powerful, so watch out. The beams will be bouncing all over. Just hold it up for a second. Hold it, hold it. And I'm going to give you the mantra to activate it. It pushes the button. Are you ready? Hi. So when you do this, you'll find something very profound. And that is that there's consciousness that emanates from every living entity. When you concentrate it out of your hand and use this mantra, the beam will touch the person and it will come back to you, and you'll be able to tell how fast they're going, what their state of mind is, whether they're interested or not interested. And that's a lot of information that's usable. So rather than running up to every single person, you can shoot them with the radar, even from across the street, and you can get a reading. And then once you get the reading, then you can make your selection process. That's a lot easier. So if I hold up my hand and I say, hi, and they go, like that. Is it ripe or unripe fruit?
Unripe.
Unripe. And if I hold up and I say, hi, and they go, hi. Ripe or unripe?
Hi.
And in Japan, when people don't want to talk to you, they say, like, say hi to me with your hand.
Hi.
They know that the consciousness comes from the eyes. And you know, when you look at somebody, I noticed this at festivals, like we were just at the Festival of Inspiration. And if you're walking around, see, festivals means you walk 5 feet, you talk for half an hour, you walk 5 feet. And the reason you get obligated to talk to somebody, not that it's a bad thing, but if you're in a hurry, it's a little troublesome, is because you look at them in the eye and then they go, hey, hi! You know? And it's like, okay. Because everyone's a ripe fruit there, so you got no excuse. So if you make eye contact, there's a conscious connection. And you'll notice that now you're obligated, you have to talk. So people know that if they look you in the eye and there's a, you know, they register something in their face, like, you know, like, okay, what do you have? They can show that to you in their face, like, okay, I'm okay, I'm open, what do you have? Or they can look at you like, no, I don't want anything. And you've probably done this before. When you're walking down the street, someone's taking a survey, obviously asking for money or something like that. You know, you might pick up your cell phone. Not available, you know, because you don't want to talk to them, right? So living entities are conscious, they know, and if you hold up your hand, you can select them by using this radar process. And even, as I said, from across the street, I've hit people with the radar way across the street, you know, it's like, hi, because they look, you know, I recognize their mode, and I just know they're probably open, so I shoot them, you know, hi. And all the way from across the street, they're like, hi! I said, I run across, you know, I go talk to them because I know that this is going to be, they're open, they're positive because I use my radar. So try this. Try the radar. Even if you're not going out to distribute books, just experiment someday and you know, walk around, hi. Just see what people do. This is homework, you know, to find out, you know, what your environment's like and see what the different reactions are to saying hi. I mean, why shouldn't people say hello? It's sort of like you get in an elevator, right? Two people in an elevator, you got 100 feet, and you just kind of like, And I've seen on airlines, too, two seats. You sit in one seat, the other person in the other, and you pretend like the other person's not there. Of course, it can be annoying also if somebody wants to talk the whole way, but I mean, this just shows there's a conscious exchange between living entities, and we're going out to initiate that. We're initiating the exchange because we have something to offer. It's our duty to find where the openings are and put in the mercy. So this is the first way to find out. And the next way is to qualify people. So once we've identified that they're a little bit open, we know that there's some opening there. If you qualify them by asking a question, the question mark is the most powerful punctuation mark in any language. Because it means that people have to respond. If you use an exclamation point or a period or anything else, they don't have to say anything back. But if you put a question mark, that means you got to answer me because I asked you a question. So question means you're directing the conversation. You're pulling in a certain direction. You're asking for a return. That's why it looks like a little hook. You're hooking people and going like that. So the question mark is a hook. And to qualify people, all you have to do is ask them a reasonable question. Once you see there's a little opening, then you can ask them a question like, are you from Toronto? And or out of town? You give them two choices. It's either Toronto or out of town. It's not yes or no. Is it Toronto or out of town? And if they say out of town, great, you're qualified. They say Toronto, great, you're qualified. Whichever it is, they're qualified. So we just want to make them feel qualified. Or if you see something on their shirt, and a lot of people wear clothing that distinguishes them. For instance, they'll have Carolina. You know, like if I saw you, I'd say, hi, Carolina. And you know, I'd notice that, by the way, because, you know, it's across your shirt. And I'd say, Carolina. And then they would say, you know Carolina? I'd say, all right, Carolina, you know. Great, you're from Carolina. Good, let me show you this too. You're qualified, basically. And, you know, whatever, it's like, oh, is that Vishnu? Yeah, all right, Vishnu, here, I'll show you one too. Whatever the opening is, whatever you can see about them that's distinctive, that qualifies them to take a look at the book, that helps, because if you simply approach them and thrust the book at them without asking them a qualifying question, they might wonder, why am I getting this? But if a tiny little qualification helps the opening even more. And then trusting the hand means to put the book in their hand. So we hand the book over, we actually put it in their hand, and even if the mind, if their mind is saying, no, 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 maybe I shouldn't take this, the hand oftentimes is perfectly willing, because that's what the hand does. So you just, their mind might not be made up completely that they want to keep engaging or that they want to go much further with the conversation, but if you hand the book over to them, their hand will go, okay, I'll take it. Even though their mind's saying, no, no, don't do it. And him, no, no, I'll take it. And so if you put the book in their hand, and as you're doing that, you give them a mantra. Here's one mantra that tells what's in it for them. So I say, books on yoga and meditation that show you how to get free from stress. And see, I say that just as I'm handing the book over. Because there's this interim period between when I'm handing the book over and before, when their hand grabs it, when they need something. They need to hear, is there something that's in this for me? And so, just as I'm handing the book over, I say, Carolina?
Yeah.
Fantastic. Here, books on yoga and meditation shows you how to get free from stress. And just as I'm handing it over, it's in midair. You see it's making the arc as it's going over. And I'm saying, books on yoga and meditation shows you how to get free from stress. Hits his hand right there. And then if he doesn't take it first, give them a second chance, it goes like this. Books on yoga meditation show them how to get free from stress. A lot of times that extra little loop at the end, they don't take it the first time, I loop it around the second time. And then their hand grabs it. It's amazing. Just a little trick. Okay, everyone say that mantra once.
Books on yoga meditation show them how to
get free from stress. And it's nice to have that mantra down. You practice it, write it on a card, and then when somebody wakes you up at 1:30 in the morning and say, what's the mantra you say?
Books on yoga meditation show you how to get free
from stress. Because when you get out and you're distributing books, you know, things might be moving a little faster than you're used to, and you say, what do I do now? Your mind's freaking out, and you just use the mantra and say, books on yoga meditation shows you how to get free from stress. And if you've practiced it, then you'll feel confident. You know, Vaisheshika Das said, use the mantra, I'll try the mantra, he guaranteed it, money back, and if it doesn't work, it's his fault. And then, you know, it takes it off of you, and you can just try it. Okay, next thing is, I ask them a question. You see, there's a question mark at the end of this. Because I want to keep the conversation in my control. I'm not handing it over to them and then opening it up for discussion. And the way I keep it under my control is I keep asking them questions. Whoever's asking the questions is controlling the conversation. And this goes for when people try to ask you a question, you want to control right back by asking them a question back again. For instance, somebody says, you know, is this religion or is this Hinduism? It's like, why? You study Hinduism? Are you studying religion? Instead of me saying, like, well, let me tell you about Hinduism, you know, then they've got you. Because they just asked a question, now they're dragging you with their little hook. But if they ask a question, you hook them right back again. It's like, well, are you studying Hinduism? Are you a student of religion? And you ask them right back again, and then puts them back on their heels. And then they say, like, well, then they can redefine the question. So this little hook here is, you've heard of stress before, right? Because it's in the mantra. I said, books on yoga and meditation shows you how to get free from stress. And then immediately, as the book hits their hand, I ask them a question. I say, you've heard of stress before, right? And what do people say?
Yes.
Usually they say yes, but it doesn't matter yes or no, because the next response matches both of them. And that's important in a progressive presentation. So most of the time people say stress, I'm stressed, or they say, yeah, of course I am, or say, no, I'm not stressed, you know, but they say it in a way that shows that they really are. So then I'll say, there are several things that I say. This is the gist of it, though, that really, you don't look stressed. Your eyes look very peaceful, or you look very peaceful. And I say, you look spiritual. Let's see the next one. Then I say, what's your secret? So they've told me they look stressed, and I say, but the other thing you can say is, if you don't say, you don't look stressed, you can say, but you look very balanced. And then say, what's your secret? Or you can say, you look very spiritual, or you look very balanced. Say, everyone say, you look very balanced.
You look very balanced.
You look very spiritual.
You look very spiritual.
Those two things, you're noticing something about them. Then again, I'm asking another question, and this is a very powerful question. What's your secret, everyone said?
What's your secret?
Turn to the next person next to you and ask them that question.
What's your secret?
It's a really powerful question. You just try that. What's your secret? You ask people, what's your secret? You're asking them in the context that they have something very valuable to offer you. You're turning the tables. In other words, you're not condescending. You're not trying to sell them something. You're taking something from them. You're honoring them. You're saying, you look very balanced. What's your secret? What have you got going? You've got something here. What is your secret? And sometimes people will tell you something. They'll immediately appreciate the question, and they'll say, I do yoga. You know, they know what their secret is. Or, I'm a vegan. Or I'm a Christian. Or something, and it reveals something about them. When they tell you their secret, now you want more information as you're presenting. Because the more you know about them as you're going forward with the presentation, the more you know how to tailor it to their needs and interests and concerns. And then sometimes people will say, I don't have a secret. Or they'll say, I don't know. Then you can suggest one to them. You can say, well, you must just come from a good family. And then some people say, yeah. Yeah, I think that's it. Or some people say, no, my family's terrible. I said, then you must just be a natural. So you can take it along, but you want to define them that they're special and that they have a secret that you're appreciating. And that's right at the point when you take the book back. So you've handed the book over with a mantra. I've said, books on yoga, meditation, shows you how to get free from stress. I ask a question, which is the book. You've heard of stress before, right? And he says,
yeah.
But you look so balanced. What's your secret?
I chant Hare Krishna.
I can tell. So when he tells me a secret, my reaction is like this. I knew it. You know, I could tell that you're into this book. It's like, we're one. We're into this together, right? It's like, okay, great. You're into this. Here, I'll show you really quick. And that's the next one. I take the book back and says, I'll show you really quick. How fast am I going to show them?
Really
quick, because their mind's going, you know, how long is this going to take? Am I going to get embarrassed standing here with somebody talking to me and stuff? I'm just going to show you really quick. So that sequence then sets you up for being able to show and tell the book, and you're still holding the whole thing together because they're in on it with you. Now you're showing them what's in and on the book, and now showing them really quick means on the back cover, there's some printed words, and those printed words are there to create credibility in the book. So you'll find there Thoreau, Gandhi, and Emerson. Those are three big names. Educated people know Thoreau and Emerson, and most people know Gandhi because he's, you know, world famous, and there was the movie Gandhi. And then Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. is probably more popular in America, but Einstein and the Beatles, that's universal, any country you go to. And if they don't like the Beatles, take the book back. They now when I show them this, it's name dropping. All you have to do, don't get into a big long thing. You just show them. Now there's three names that are not on there. It doesn't matter. Drop the names anyway. It's like they're in the hat, you're just pulling them out. So you tell them these things: Thoreau, Emerson, Gandhi, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Albert Einstein, the Beatles. They all read this book. That's all you have to say. Everyone say the names.
Thoreau, Gandhi, Emerson, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Einstein, the Beatles.
They all read this book.
They all read this book.
Yes.
Awesome. Sometimes I say Hitler also read this book. I don't know what he got from it. He should have studied more carefully, though. And usually people did laugh, so it brings some humor.
Hitler.
Yeah.
Use that one with caution. Okay, now that I've told them that all these people read the book, I say that the book is thousands of years old, and it's been translated hundreds of times. Yes?
Yeah, usually that's what I say. Like, I say that... We have a project and we try to get people to be more spiritual, and so we printed this very old manuscript from India, which is in Sanskrit, and it kind of gets them like, this is kind of exotic kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what we say after that. I'll open the book and I'll say... And if it has it's the big book, it has the Sanskrit in it, I'll say it's been translated hundreds of times. I'll open the book and I'll point to the Sanskrit and I'll say, can you read that? And they say, no. And I say, okay, I was just testing it. And then they laugh a little bit. And then I say, but out of all the versions, this has become the most popular academically. And then I point out in the front cover at least two of the universities that are well known. I'll say USC, that's University of California, and Georgetown University. And then if you're near a local university, you can say, and these are also used at what's the college here?
University of Toronto.
UT. They have them here? You have them in the library?
Yeah, they do.
Or you can say they're in the library at UT.
And York.
And York University.
Montreal.
But again, it's and it's name-dropping. So first you're showing these famous people in the back. Then you mentioned that the book's thousands of years old. It's been translated many hundreds of times. But out of all the versions, this has become the most popular academically. And then you show a couple of universities. And you might mention that it's also used locally at the ones that people have heard of. And then comes the show and tell of the pictures. That's the next one. So I first turn to the changing bodies picture. And it's good to familiarize yourself with where the pictures are in the book so you don't waste much time. You can turn right to it. And there's something you can say about all the pictures. I'm just showing a couple here to give an idea of presenting the pictures because they catch people's attention. And they're in the book specifically so we can convey simple philosophical concepts with one look. And so for this changing bodies, and I'll hold the book right like this so they can see it very clearly, and I'll say, look, we start here, we end up here, we're just passing through. And the consciousness survives the end of the body. And then I'll say, where are you in all this? So we start here, repeat after me, we start here,
we
end up here,
we're
just passing through,
we're just passing through.
So consciousness survives the end of the body. And where are you in all this?
Where are you in all this?
And, you know, sometimes they say, I don't know. I say, yeah, take a look, see where you are. Get them engaged a little bit. Say, where do you think you are? And they'll point to a certain place in the book. And then, on the next page, well, let's hold it here for 1 second. On the next page, I don't have this on the slides, but you'll see this picture which relates to the verse Vidya Vinaya Sampane Brahmani Gavi Hasani, that the learned sage sees with equal vision a Brahman, a cow, a dog, and a dog eater outcast. So I'll say, look, this shows a self-realized person. A self-realized person treats everyone with respect because he or she sees gods in everyone's heart. That's a really popular line, you know. A self-realized person treats everyone with respect because he or she sees gods in everyone's heart. Or sees the spiritual principle within everyone's heart. And then I'll say, well, and I'll tell you a couple more about the Then there's the horses. And I see the horses? These represent the senses. They pull us in different directions. But the first benefit of yoga is to learn how to control the senses, and then you can go whatever direction you want in life, make progress. So then I ask them, you've heard of karma, right? And most people say, yeah, I've heard of karma. Then I ask them another question, what does it mean to you? And they give various answers of what it means to them. And what answers do you think they give?
What goes around comes around.
It's a very common one. And as soon as they say that, I say, whoa, that's a really great explanation. Or I'll say, wow, I really like the way you put things. And I'll say, if more people thought like you, the world would be a better place. I mean, I'm attributing the whole thing to, you know, they'll say, what goes around comes around. I'll say, wow, that's really incredible. And if more people thought like you, this world would be a better place to live. So that's a place where you can really appreciate them for their answer. And you sort of, you know, really lean into it. So, whoa, what a great explanation. I really like the way you put things. If more people thought like you, this would be a better world to live in. You can be emphatic about that when they give the answer to karma. And then they're feeling, this is making them feeling really connected with what you're teaching them. Like, it's almost as if you're presenting, but they're actually teaching you. This is your stance as you're going through. You're not telling them, but you're getting them to say things. And when they say it, you're going, wow, you're teaching me. You're enlightening me. I really like the way you're presenting this book to me. You're kind of reversing it, you see. And so the next one, I'll show them this picture of a cow with a man's head and a man with a cow's head. And I say, here's karma. Like, what goes around comes around. Generosity breeds generosity. Violence breeds violence. Then, next one, I ask them this picture. Keep going. What do you do professionally? That's the next question. So I'm asking this next question. I'm holding the book now, and I'm getting ready to hand it back to them to ask for a donation. So now I'm still controlling the conversation. I'm asking them questions. And so I ask them what they do professionally. I don't say, what kind of work do you do? I say, what do you do professionally? And they might say, I'm a civil engineer. I'm a Sunday school teacher. I'm a dancer. So I say, really, this guy used to be a civil engineer. So I opened this cage with this yogi sitting here, you know, he looks a little gnarly. And so you point to the thing and say, really, this guy used to be a civil engineer. Or, really, this guy used to be a Sunday school teacher. This guy used to be a dancer. Whatever it is, ask them specifically what they do professionally. If they say engineer, say, what kind of engineer are you? And they go, I'm quality control. And there's a, really, this guy was into quality control. And then the more specific it is, the more funny it is. Yes?
The soft cover doesn't have the sage, but it has Vyasadeva, and that works too.
Okay, that's a good point.
It's just in a white cloth in the mountains.
Good. Excellent point. Thank you. So the soft copy doesn't have that picture, but you can use the picture of Vyasadeva. He's also, you know, looking like, you know, the next Sunday school teacher. So now, see, humor is really important. It opens them up. It kind of lightens the whole thing. And I'm holding the book, but they just laughed. Now, one of the things is that when they laugh at your joke, they owe you. It's an old sales thing. If somebody laughs at you, then they actually owe you something. So, right then, when they laugh, I hand the book back. Now, half the people, when I say, you know, this guy used to be a Sunday school teacher, they don't laugh, and they'll say, really? You know, because a lot of it's out of respect. It's respecting this as a spiritual book. It's, you know, you're somebody who's very serious, and they're thinking, you know, why would he tell a joke? He doesn't want to be sacrilegious and, you know, laugh at something. Yeah. So that's usually why they don't laugh at first. And then, so they'll say, really? And I'll say, no, not really. And then they laugh. And, you know, that it relieves them of that sort of formality, and they go, ah, 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 ah. And right then, they're laughing, and I'm handing the book back. And so this is another one where I'm handing the book back and I'm saying a mantra in midair. So here comes the arc. Remember the arc on the first one? I'm handing the book back and I say, we don't sell it. That's the first sentence. We don't sell it. Like at a bookstore. You see, they're still thinking, now there's still a chance when you hand the book back. that they might have already decided in their mind, I know what's going on here. They're going to sell me the book. There's a donation coming up. I sense it. And therefore, they're like, I'm not taking it when he tries to hand it back. Right? So that's why this mantra is very powerful, because you go, oh, we don't sell it. And they go, oh, okay, like in a bookstore. And so the book's in there. We don't sell it like in a bookstore. You just take a donation. That's the short version. And the longer version that I use for we don't sell it like in a bookstore is I hand the book back and say, we don't sell it like in a bookstore. And then they put it in their hand. And I say, but if we did, how much do you think it would be? And usually they say, I don't know. And I say, sure, you do. Give a guess. You've bought a book before. Just give a wild guess. And they'll say, I don't know, $20. And then I'll say, that's pretty close, but we don't sell it. We take a donation. So what that does is that gives them a kind of a stake in the whole thing. When they say a number, they're kind of acknowledging that it's a valuable book. And so I'll say, we don't sell it like in a bookstore. We just take a donation. And then the next one says, it helps oftentimes to make it very specific how much the book costs. The book costs $10 for us to print. Or the book costs $10 to produce. And anything you give over that is a donation. A lot of times when you ask for a donation, people will hesitate because they'll feel that they don't know how much to give. They don't want to give too little. They don't want to insult you and say, here's $5 or something like that. In fact, that's usually the reason that people hesitate. So if you say they cost $10 to produce, anything over that is a donation, it kind of relieves them. And then they have some parameters to work with, a context, and then they can tell you, I can't afford that much. And say, it doesn't matter, because there's somebody giving a donation. Next. I tell them, when you give something in return for spiritual knowledge, it connects a circle. It's called Sukriti. It gives you the power to read and understand the book. I tell them that we don't need the money, but it's a tradition when you accept spiritual knowledge and you give something in return, it connects a circle. That's a really kind of metaphorical, nice way to put it. Yeah.
When we often ask for donation, they say, where would they put it? So they're asking, is there any donation box where they can put it?
Where would they put it?
Yeah.
Just be really a matter of fact. I mean, if there's a table and there's a hundi there, then you say, we take it right over here. Or just say, we just take it right here. And oftentimes people say, I don't have any money. Or they say, I don't have any cash. They say, great. Everything's great. Whatever they say is great. So they say, I don't have any cash. They say, yeah, great. We don't take cash. We take MasterCard Visa. And thing is, any objection they give, you honor the objection. You don't reject it. But if they say, I'm like this, I'm like that, I say, oh, perfect. That's exactly what we were looking for. And then you move on to the next thing. So the idea of the donation is, just be really straightforward that, it's a donation. And then if you like, you can say they're this much to print, so you give them an idea. Or this much to produce. After that, everything's a donation. And then we'd say that we do this to spread love of God. Or we're doing this to spread spiritual knowledge. And after they give a donation, then we teach them the mantra. So the next thing is that I ask them, do you believe in the power of prayer? And most people say,
yes.
Yeah. And some people say, no. And then I say, perfect.
Great.
Here's a mantra. And so everything's perfect, right? You honor their objections. Yeah, I don't believe in prayer. I don't believe in God. So perfect. Great. Here's a mantra. And so they say, believe in the power of prayer. And they say, sure. Then you hand them the mantra. And you say, okay, this is a prayer written in Sanskrit. It's meant to wake up love for God in your heart. It's a little hard to pronounce, so I'll say it the first time. You can just repeat after me, are you ready? So I just go right through the series and say, are you ready? And so it's quick. It trips over the mind thinking yes, no, maybe. And then you say, are you ready? And they go, okay. And sometimes they say, no, can't do it. Which is interesting, because why not? Because everyone knows there's some power in this. They're sensing it. And sometimes there's a couple, and the woman's about to say it, and the man goes, don't do it. And you'll think about that the next day when you're chanting your japa. It's like, what did they not want to do? I mean, what's this going to do to me if I'm actually taking it straight ahead with no hesitation? I'm opening my ears. What's in this mantra? It's going to do some heavy thing to me, which is good. And so, if they say, and actually the other day we had a person, I showed him the mantra, I said, so repeat after me. And he goes, I don't want to repeat it. I go, okay, great, just say it. And then he goes, okay, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. So whatever they say, it's great, and then just use an alternative, because the mind is a switch. The mind says yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. And the mind's looking for alternatives. It's just randomly picking yes, no based on their samskar, which is yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. So you just have to give it another alternative. And it's the same when you hand over a book and they say no. And you go, yeah, I agree with you. That's not for you. And then you take it back and you give them the next one. Because the switch will go back and forth until it catches. Just like I was in Hong Kong and I had 7 different kinds of books. And I talked to one guy and I handed him one book. He said no. So as he's handing the book back, see, I gave him that one, and he hands it back to me, and I keep taking it back, honoring the fact that he's giving it back, but I just keep handing him the next one. And the hand will keep taking it, and he hands that one back, and I just hand him the next one. And so, with this person in Hong Kong, we went through 7. When he got to number 7, he just took it. So the mind is like that. Honor it, take it back, offer the next alternative, whether it's a word, a phrase, or a different way of doing it, a different book. Everything has an option, and then you just honor their objection, take it back, and offer them the next thing. Okay, so then we teach them the Maha Mantra, and we say 2 words at a time. We say, okay, repeat after me, and I say, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare
Krishna.
Krishna Krishna.
Hare Hare.
Hare Hare.
Hare Rama.
Hare Rama.
Hare Rama.
Hare Rama.
Rama Rama.
Rama Rama.
Hare Hare.
Hare Hare.
Then, give prasada. There's no earthly reason why every person shouldn't get a piece of prasada. I mean, it's the mantra in edible form, really. And that they're able to get spiritual advancement just by taking a sweet or a savory or something like that. So we should always make sure that we're armed with prasadam wherever we go and give everyone prasadam. No earthly reason not to give prasadam to each person that you meet. And so they get a book, they give a donation, they chant a mantra, they take prasadam. That's powerful. And then the next thing is, get their contact information. If they're open, if they were nice, just ask them that, would you like to hear more about classes that we have about this, so you can follow up with it, and then get their information, and then you should have a way that they can hear about you, get on an automatic drip system, so they can know about the classes that you're having that would suit their needs. What do we have next? And then leave everyone with a good impression. Whether they take the book or not, you should honor them as if that, you know, they took their valuable time. If they don't take the book, don't act all disappointed. Don't even subtly suggest that, you know, it would have been better that they took, you would have liked them better if they had taken the book. Don't leave them with that. Leave them with the fact that you honor them, you appreciate them, whether they take the book, don't take the book. However they interact with you, you honor them. You be humble and respect the fact that they took their valuable time. I had a couple in Honolulu. I talked to them. They were Christians. I showed them the Bhagavatam. They said, we're not into this, and we can't give a donation because this is against our church. But I honored them so much, and I really felt it from my heart, that a half an hour later, they came back to me and said, we'd like to donate. And that will happen a lot when you just honor people, whether they give or don't give. Okay, next. Leave everyone with a good impression. Our prime directive is...
Leave everyone with a good impression.
Take a book, don't take a book, stop, don't stop, doesn't matter. Just be out there to leave everyone with a good impression. Be in that mode all the time that you're being observed as a representative, as an ambassador of goodwill. And everyone you meet, everyone you can come in contact with should have a good impression of how you're conducting yourself as a representative of the spiritual world. So, let's go through this really quick. Distributing sets, Prabhupada wanted sets distributed, and they're available, you just have to make them visible, and you'll sell hundreds of sets. so people will take them. Chaitanya Charitamrita and, yeah. And foreign language books, always good to have foreign language. Don't miss an opportunity. If you're in an area where you know there's Farsi speakers, make sure you have Farsi books. It's you lose points. We should subtract points when you don't have the right book. You know, if you're there, the person says only speaks Farsi and you're not able to produce the book, we should subtract points from the score. So make sure you have it. You can also take a little language card. This one happens to be in Vietnamese. And you can, if people don't speak your language, you can use a language card, or you can use your smartphone, because there's a Google Translate. And you just put in the words that you want and hit their language, and it'll come up nice and big on the screen. And I walk around Vietnam town all the time, and I just show them the mantra on my screen, hand them the Vietnamese book, and they're very happy about it. And it's a nice way to distribute books in their own language. And know a greeting or two in every language, a few words. Learn these like mantras, so you become versatile when you go around and meet different kinds of people. That's the key that opens their heart. There's more about book distribution and more about mantras on our website, Fan and Spark, and you'll see the little link there called Book Distribution. There's all kinds of lectures. And talking about set distribution, there's a couple of lectures, one in Washington, D.C. I just presented the Bhagavatam on its own merit at the Sunday feast, and people bought, they sold 46 sets in about 10 minutes.
Hare Krishna.
And that included people texting in, buying, you know, raising their hands, taking sets and things like that. So think about, you can listen to some of those presentations and find out what some of the mantras were for that. Next. And that's it. So now we're going to do this exercise. We're going to start down by Lord Jagannath, who's at the end of this hallway, this Jagmohan hallway here. It's the Kirtan hall name, known as Jagmohan. And all the way to the radiator where Lord Jagannath is, we're going to make two lines. And devotees facing each other, one-on-one, coming all the way back up this hallway. And on the side that's facing outward, you'll have a Bhagavad Gita in your hand. Do we have those Gitas?
Yes.
Okay. So here's the thing. The hardest thing about book distribution is troop movement, getting everyone out from one place to the next. So this is part of it right now. How fast can we get up and lined up facing each other? This is an indication of how successful your group will be this year. And we're counting the seconds to see how fast and efficiently, fast and efficiently, you can get lined up. And someone also has to put the books in their hands. So elect a captain if you have to, with somebody to take charge, get lined up, make sure you're facing another person. And then everyone has a book in their hands. You've got 10 seconds to beat the world record. 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3. Make sure you're facing someone. It's two lines, not five lines, and not three. Two lines. 2, 1.5, 1. Raise your hand if you've got it. Raise your hand if you've got a partner, you're lined up with the person across from you facing the temple room has a book in their hand. Pretty good. You came close to the world record. Okay, so one thing is that okay. Is this mic going to feed back if I walk down there? Okay, if you can hear me, raise your hand. If you can hear me, raise your hand. Okay, good. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to practice going one way, and then we're going to practice going the other way. And
you want to get some repetitions in. Don't feel bad if you forget part of the presentation. But remember one thing. This is a quick presentation. It's not a Bhagavatam class. And you don't have to go off into a lot of explanation about each part. Just try to hit each part of it as quickly and as efficiently as you can so you can go through the whole cycle one time. And before you start, I want to point out that when you're distributing books, body language is very important. We communicate not just with what we say, but with how we look. One thing is, when we go out for book distribution, you should look nice. You should dress in something. If you're going in Western clothes, they should look nice. And if you go in the Eastern clothes, they should also look nice. It's good to have, if you can look at yourself or have somebody who knows what looks good look at you and say, you know, you look okay, or, you know, you've got two different color socks on, maybe you want to work on that. So that's important. Look sharp when you go out. Your representative. Prabhupada always looked good when he went out. He would make sure his tilak was straight on. He would have a flower garland. He dressed up nicely. And so that's one thing. Now, another thing is, just as far as body language goes, when you hold the book in your hand and you approach people on the street like this, you're telegraphing something, and that is, I've got something for you. And it tends to shut people down because they see you coming from a mile away. They see you've got a book in your hand. If you're walking up to people like this, hi. They're going, I know what you want. You want to sell a book. That's what you guys always want to do. So it's better to hang back. If I'm holding a book, for instance, in my hand, I keep it under here so my hands are free. So look, I can't hurt you. The book's not in my hand. And I also stand back a little bit because I'm not chasing them. And now here's one of the things. Don't chase people. Don't follow people. You're selecting people. And don't block their way either. It's not by force that you distribute books, it's by selection. You select the right people, and then you take them through the cycle, and when you attract them to that, they'll take the book. So don't chase, don't block, and don't force anybody to take it. And so that means your body language is more like this. Now, look, see how I'm standing back? I'm like detached. I'm like, I'm not sure if you're qualified or not. Am I going to give you the book or not? This is more my attitude. It's like, do you deserve this? Do you deserve to take this book? It's not like, hey, you got to take this. Come on, come on, come on. But it's more like, I'm waiting for the right person who's got enough brains to appreciate this. You know, is that you or not? No? Okay, forget it. Go ahead. You go on. I'll talk to another guy. The more you're in that detached mode, the more people will be attracted to you. Oftentimes, if I have a table, I don't even keep a book in my hand. I just keep it on the table. It's somewhere nearby. And my hands are free. So when they see me, I'm just stopping, hi. And then I start to engage them. And as soon as I qualify them and say, you're from Columbia University? Fantastic. Here, hold on. 1 second. Take a look. Books on yoga and meditation. It shows how to get free from stress. And then the book comes out. So just remember, you don't have to have the book loaded in your hand, you know, ready to, like, nail them with it or something like that. So when you're starting off, practice this. Sit back. Be a little detached. Keep the book out of your hand. Okay, then just go. I'm going to go through the rep one time all the way through so that you get an idea. Hi.
Hi.
You from Toronto or out of town?
I am. I'm from Toronto.
You are? Great. I'll show you one too. And I use the word show. Show is an innocuous word. You can use it. Books on yoga and meditation shows you how to get free from stress. You've heard of stress before, right?
Well, I'm very stressed.
But you look so balanced. What's your secret?
I just keep a straight face.
She keeps a straight face. But it looks like more than that. It looks deeper, like you might have some spiritual practice or something like that. What do you do?
Yeah, I do meditate.
I knew it. I could tell. Here, I'll show you really quick. See, as soon as I get that recognition that, you know, she does something spiritual, I acknowledge this. I knew it. Great. I'll show you really quick, and I take the book back. Look. Thoreau, Emerson, Gandhi, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Albert Einstein, the Beatles, they all studied this book. And it's from the Sanskrit language. Can you read that?
No.
Let the record show, she said no. I'm just testing you. And then they say, this book's thousands of years old. It's been translated over 500 times. But out of all the versions, this has become the most popular academically. USC, for the University of Southern California? Georgetown University. Again, just notice, I'm just mentioning names. I'm dropping all kinds of names, right? And then you say, and UT has this in their library. And here, now I'll show it to you in a nutshell. Now, say the nutshell. Okay. So now I know right where to turn in the book because I'm used to it. And I open up to the changing bodies. And I say, look, we start here. We end up here. We're just passing through. Where are you in all this? You're right here? I'm passing down this way. I was here 5 minutes ago. And look at this shows a self-realized person who treats everyone with respect because he or she sees God's in everyone's heart. And see, these are horses. They're like the senses. The senses are very strong. They pull us in different directions. But the first benefit of yoga is to show us how to control the senses so we can go the direction we want in life. And you've heard of karma before, right?
Yes, sir.
What does it mean to you?
Actions, they come.
Hold it for her.
So your past actions, they come to bite you.
I really like the way you put things. If more people thought like you, this would be a better world to live in.
I'll take the book.
And look at, yeah, she'll take the book. And here it is graphically, I say. And I show, and I say, look, this won a graphics award for illustrating karma. And I show, man with a cow's head, cow with a man's head. See, violence breeds violence, generosity breeds generosity. And what do you do professionally?
I'm in finance.
Finance. Look, this guy used to be in finance. See, now she laughed, and I say, we don't sell it like in a bookstore. We just take a donation. So if you give a donation, you can take it with you. They cost us 10 to print. Anything you give over that is a donation. The only reason we ask for a donation is because when you give something in return for spiritual knowledge, it's a tradition, it connects a circle. It gives you a power to appreciate and go deeply into the book. Now she gives a donation. Don't have any cash?
Yeah, that's...
It's doesn't have any cash?
I want to take it, but I don't have any cash.
Perfect. We don't take cash. We take MasterCard, Visa, American Express, Carte Blanche, and Diners Club. And so now she gives a donation. And I say, great. And I'll... do you believe in the power of prayer?
I do.
And I'll say no. Do you believe in the power of prayer?
No.
Great. I'll teach you a mantra. So then I take out the card and I say, here, this is a mantra. And this has, it's a combination of syllables. It's meant to open our minds and our hearts. And I'll say it. It's a little hard to pronounce. So I'll say it once and you can repeat. Are you ready?
Sure.
Hare Krishna.
Hare
Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Krishna Krishna.
Krishna Krishna.
Hare
Hare.
Hare Rama.
Hare Rama.
Hare Rama.
Hare Rama.
Rama Rama.
Rama Rama.
Hare Hare. You're a natural. And then I say, here's some, I give them prasadam. I say, here's for being so nice. And I hand them some prasadam. And then if they're a candidate, I say, if you'd like, you can be on our mailing list. We send out information about programs that we have, classes on Bhagavad Gita and stuff like that. Would you like that?
Sure.
Great. And you can just put your name here and have them fill out the form. And then the last thing is, I want to thank you for taking your valuable time. It was really nice to talk to you. Have a great day. Hare Krishna. There you go. Okay. Yeah, give her a hand. Okay. Now, you're going this way, and just try to go through the reps and remember the different sequences, and don't worry about messing up. Just get through the best you can, and go rather systematically, quickly. Don't get waylaid and invent a bunch of new stuff. And if the person forgets, then the person who's receiving the book, you can help them out a little bit and remind them. And the two of you try to get through the repetition going this way, and then we're going to go the other way. Are you ready?
Yes.
Now, how are you holding the book? How do you start? You're relaxed, right? Detached. What does it look like to be detached? You're holding the book back. You're not chasing them. You don't try to block their way. You're trying to attract them over. And remember to start with your radar. Trust the hand. Use the mantra as you're handing it over. And then you're name dropping, and then show and tell. And we have all this on at a glance sheet so you can study it, you know, in the interim so you can get this pattern down. And then go out and make a bunch of mistakes because when you do that, then you'll learn it gradually, gradually. Ready? Go. Yeah. Now get back in your original rows. And we'll take a couple of quick questions just to get a sampling for how it's going. What are the questions? If you're approaching with another book, the pattern is the same as far as stopping them, putting the book in their hand. And then you come up with, the mantra is similar for handing it over, if you like to start with. And then you can just pick out your own sections to show them. And say, you know, these whatever picture's in the book, you can just present that. And you can summarize the other things, but without showing them on the cover. You can say that these books are famous books, they've been respected in universities and things like that. Or there's other lines. Right now we're just concentrating on the Bhagavad Gita, and you'll get sort of an idea how the flow goes. And then with other books, there are specific mantras that you can use that are abbreviated mantras or that are specific to those books. But it's not within the scope right now for me to go into each one of those. But the idea of this exercise is get a feeling for the fact that there is a beginning, middle, and an end. And that you go through that cycle. And then it works with any of the books, a beginning, middle, and end. And even with smaller books, the beginning, middle, and end can last 5 seconds. I mean, it can be really quick with some of them. You know, these are spiritual books. Good to see you. We're distributing thousands of them. We just take donations. Give the most you can. Like that. And it can go really quickly. Another question?
After you give the pitch and then you're ready to ask about the donation, you said something in between that. I can't remember. You asked a question before you...
Just about right before I hand the book back over, I ask them what they do professionally.
Okay.
And then they say, you know, I'm a Sunday school teacher. And I say, really? This guy used to be a Sunday school teacher. And then they laugh. And as soon as they laugh, I say, I hand the book back and I say, we don't sell it, like in a bookstore. It's for a donation. So if you give a donation, you can take it with you. They cost us 10 to print. And we don't need the money. The reason we ask is when you give something in return for spiritual knowledge. A lot of people with the donation, if they're inclined, they already know it's a donation. So when you just start to hint at, you know, it's a they'll just start going, of course, sure. Those are the most open people. They just start putting their bags down and saying, you know, I'll give something. Right away. Other people, you know, they might think about it for a minute. They might think, you know, should I, shouldn't I? And so there's a few other mantras that you say, like, we don't need the money. The reason we ask is when you give something in return for spiritual knowledge, it connects the circle. You know, and then, you know, some of you say, what's the donation for? We do this as a service to spread spiritual knowledge. You might notice that nowadays there's a lot of technology that's been advanced in society, but it hasn't guaranteed happiness. So our job is to spread the spiritual knowledge so that people can actually find inner peace. And that's why we take the donations. We're systematically doing this all over the world. Another question? Yes.
Okay. When we're in partners, the person who is the person receiving the book, is it good for the exercise to give them challenging...
Not so much. Better just go along for this one. You don't have to, just go along and agree to everything for this exercise. You don't need to put up so many challenges. You can practice those when you go on the street. And there's an answer for everything. But right now we're learning a preliminary presentation, a template that you can follow. Once you learn the template and you're successful at it a few times, then you'll start to see there are all kinds of variations and there's all kinds of alternative things that will happen when you're distributing, and you'll learn all those too. That's a more advanced course. Okay, let's go the other way. Now, everyone on this side has the book and you're going to present. And by the way, let me just ask, stay on the same side you are, just hand the book over to the other side. How did your those who are receiving the books... How did your presenters do in general? How did everyone do? Give them a hand then. Come on, a big hand. you get to present the other way, so you've both had the benefit of working together, and you kind of, the mantra's thickening a little bit. So go ahead and start on this side. Remember your body language. You're detached. You're not chasing anybody. You don't follow anybody. You don't block anybody. But you're picking out the ripe fruits, and you're using your radar to start. Are you ready?
Yes.
I'm not convinced. Are you ready?
Yes!
Go!
Okay, so who has a question or a comment?
Does it make a difference when you say obtain permission rather than we ask for permission?
No, not so much. It's subtly different, but you can experiment with that and see which works better for you. We take a donation, we ask for donation. Or sometimes we say people give donations, we accept donations. There's different ways of wording it. But see which one works best for you. Oh, she had a question in the back.
It didn't happen now, but it happened to me today on the street. We're supposed to control, right? But the person was trying to control as well, so there's this, you know, small competition, like you're trying to guide, but the person is trying to guide. So
yeah, I like the word guide better anyway, rather than control. Although I used it before, I use guide now, it's better. Well, if you meet somebody who is really wants to control the conversation, they may not be a ripe fruit. And sometimes it's better, you know, it's better just to, if they totally want to control the whole thing, just go along with it. I had a person who was probably a 45 or 50 year old man who was with his daughter who was 12 on the street in Santa Cruz, and he was very talkative. And he was sort of speaking to impress his daughter, and when I showed him the book, he was telling her about the book, even though he didn't know about it. He was telling all he knew about God. He was saying, yeah, everything's one. God's here, God's there, everything's the same. And then he asked a few questions, and he said, so you want a donation for this, right? And I said, yes. And he said, oh, okay. Well, forget it then. I knew you were just trying to exploit. They're all religions are the same and everything like that. And he went on and on and on. And I just tolerated and listened to a lot of the things that he was saying. And after 5 minutes of venting, he just stopped and he gave a donation. And he handed the book to his daughter. So there are all kinds of things that can happen. And that's sort of the mystery and magic of Sangirtan. You don't know what's going to happen with Krishna's mercy and with, you know, your persistence and things like that. So we're giving sort of a template to work with, and then you can experiment from there. So you have to develop the sense how to judge people. You know, if sometimes it's like riding a horse, you let the reins out a little bit, and sometimes you pull the reins in. You're not always pulling in and trying to control, but sometimes if you let people spin on their own, and you're a little bit more docile, then they'll appreciate it. And we heard last night from, what's her name? From the Bhakti Lounge? Shannon was telling us how she met she's Indian, and she met some Indian gentlemen who knew everything, who knew all the mantras. They were trying to impress her and dominate the conversation. And then she got really heavy on them at one point and sort of blasted them, and then they gave a donation. But, you know, she's an 18-year-old, and everyone has a different sort of rapport with people according to their position, so you sort of have to adjust it accordingly. Another question?
I was with both of them the last 2 days, and they both had this experience, and I go up and say, I think you're wasting your time. Right? They'll stand, somebody will talk to them for like 20 minutes, and one guy was telling us how to meditate, right? And he go into the inside of the dark room. There's a lot of other people walking by here. So, I mean, you can tell if they're, like you say, you can't always tell everything, but if you really see it's not going favorably, like for one thing, if they won't take the book, like you try to give it and they won't even accept it, and then they're just telling you how you should, what you should do, how you should meditate. You know, so, and meanwhile, there's tons of people walking by. So, I mean, like you say, there's, we have to, like, I guess, depend on super soul.
Well, 20 minutes is an indication. Obviously, Bhagavata Prabhu in San Francisco airport, and there was a man from Taiwan, and Bhagavata and I were working together as a team, so we called people over, because we had a booth, and we worked together, and so we keep encouraging each other. So Bhagavata was taking a long time talking to this man, and it, to me it looked like it was going nowhere, and I kept nudging Bhagavata, saying, come on, let's go, you know. Like, that's it, stop. You know, so finally Bhagavata said, look, sir, we gotta, you know, I gotta move on. There's lots of other people here. And he goes, oh, okay, I'm sorry, you want a donation? He goes, yeah, and he gave $2,000. In hundreds. So you never know. And then Bhagavata's like, oh, let me tell you a little more about this. Another question?
About the qualifying question?
Yes.
To ask a question that has two options can sometimes be a little cumbersome. Because normally we, in conversation, we'll ask a question that yields a yes or a no. So can you elaborate on how we can ask a nice question that captures
For qualification, I also mentioned another aspect which, thinking about it, I use more frequently, and that is to notice something about them. I pick up something that's unique about that person, and I'll bring it out. Like I'll say, I'll see that they have a hat or a logo, or they dress in a particular way. Something distinctive, I'll bring it out, and I'll mention it. And once they do, then I'll make the connection based on that. One of the mantras I use is, now you're talking my language. And they'll say, Harvard? You know, they'll have a Harvard shirt, and they'll say, Harvard, or I'll just say, all right, Harvard! Like, point to the shirt. And when they respond, then I say, you know, I'll just shake their hand. And this is another thing about connecting to people, especially when they're moving, is to make physical contact with them. And in America and Canada, one way that's really effective on the street is to do this. Yeah. See? So, in fact, people actually are magnetized towards that when you go like this. In fact, sometimes I just stand there when people are walking by and I go like this. And they can't help it. They just bump hands and they go, all right, where are you from? That's one of the ways I stop people, just like this. And as soon as they touch. So, if you simplify it and just say, I noticed something. Like Bhagavata, he'll notice their hair. It's like, hey, I noticed your hair. If he sees a bald guy, he'll say, hey, all right, you and me. Like something like that. It just makes a commonality, like you're connecting to a person. Sometimes I say to people, we're picking out the best dressed people out here today. If someone's dressed nicely, so we're picking out the best dressers. And if they kind of smile and they say, oh, I'm not the best dresser, and say that, then they say, no, seriously, we're picking, you know, and I shake their hand like that. So noticing something about their personality or what they're wearing, that's also a way to qualify them. It was the reason that you stopped them, that's the qualification. And then if there's a further question, like once they're stopped, and then you look for the time when you say, okay, I'm going to hand the book over to them. It's like once they stop based on the fact that, what is that logo you have anyway? There.
West Side something?
West Side, all right. Now you're talking my language. And you're from West Side?
Nope.
Where are you from?
From Toronto.
Perfect, here. And then I come to the same conclusion. I'm just waiting for the point what, you know, I somehow make a connection with them, what they're wearing, what, how they're dressed, how they wear their hair, something like that that I appreciate. A lot of times when people are walking by, I notice the necklace. People wear a necklace because they want people to see it, and they just say, "We're admiring your necklace." And if I'm standing with a group of people, you know, say, we were admiring your shirt, we were admiring your necklace, we were admiring your earring, whatever it was, you know, we were admiring something, and they go, and they said, "Really nice," you know. And then it's like, "You're from Toronto?" No, I'm from out of town. "Really? Great, here. Whatever it is, it's really great. Okay, here, I'll show you one too." Whatever they say in the course of stopping them and identifying something about them. "Really? Great, here, I'll show you this also." Does that help at all? Okay. Another question?
Well, I do understand what does donation mean, but when we go somewhere and we try to meet someone and give them a book and ask for a donation, and a person who we are meeting them for the first time and we do not know what is his state of mind, okay, body language, eye contact, other aspects, things like that. What basically I'm asking is that when we are telling that person about the donation, because that person is already stressed or whatever his state of mind, what do you think that it's again a commercial aspect he's asking donation?
Is it cumbersome?
Commercial.
What do you think that is again a commercial aspect?
Will he think it's commercial?
Yeah, because when we are asking about donation, we may perceive it as a commercial aspect, though because he doesn't understand that the value of spirituality or the value of what he's basically going to help me in the long run.
Well, some people will appreciate it and some people won't. Some people give just because you ask them to. Some people say no. Other people get it right away and you know, want to give a donation, or they offer. Some people volunteer it before you even ask. They'll say, you know, "Can I give a donation for this?" So it varies according to the type of person that you're approaching. It's good to keep in mind that the reason we ask for a donation is because this is sacred literature, and we don't want to just toss it out there to people who aren't qualified. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, "Don't preach this message to people who are not devoted or austere." That's his message. And so when we're distributing a book, and we ask something in return for it, it's giving them an opportunity to show some donation, to show some devotion, and perform some austerity. It's a token.
Yeah, I understand. It's a token you're taking, asking for. But what I'm going to say is that person who's taking your book, unless he goes once, because once he goes something like that, if a person is motivated, he will keep on waiting. Like me, I'm motivated, I will keep on giving donation. Maybe later on, that person might start giving the donation.
Yeah, that's why the prime directive is
my
to...
My point is that.
Pardon?
My point is that time you want... He may think that is a commercial aspect, but once he understands that thing, then later on, subsequently, that person will start giving on parallel basis the donation.
I don't understand.
Okay, I think I'm a little complicated. What I'm saying is that you are meeting a person, a new person,
yes,
which we do not know,
yeah,
and we are telling you the reason that give the donation. Now, that person, because he's living in that commercial world, he will think perhaps he's asking about the donation. Again, from the commercial aspect, it is not, he's not understanding that. But once we give him, okay, we have the okay. This one saying in English, the charity begins at home. If we give him for the first time, because it is going to benefit him, we know, as a person, it is going to benefit him. If we give him for the first time, and when he goes to that book, and subsequently when he sees the benefit, then he'll start giving the donation. What I'm saying
actually,
is that...
Actually, yeah, I see what the point is now. Here's the thing. In some ways, it's the opposite of what you're saying. And Prabhupada taught us like this. He actually told us that when he told us the story of a boy who went to give away really nice mangoes. He went door to door and said, "Here, free mangoes," and nobody would take them. And then he changed his strategy and said, "You know, mangoes, $3 each." And everyone said, "Okay, give me three. And let me bring my neighbors in and everything." When you ask something in return, it adds value to it. And what Prabhupada taught us was that when somebody gives something in return, then they think about it. It has some value for them. And they think, what did I give, you know, that donation for? They'll actually read it. They put some value on it. And we see all the time that people who give away free literature, it gets thrown right away in the garbage can. People don't value it, especially in America. Everything's free, free, free. Even a nicely printed book, they'll just think it was free. It's no good. But if they take the trouble to give a donation, it imprints on their mind that I gave something. I appreciate your point, though, because we also don't want to leave anybody feeling that they were roughly handled or something like that. That's why my point is you should leave everyone with a good impression. If you present nicely, people will be attracted and they'll actually want to give a donation. And if you qualify people as you're going through, you'll find people that do want to give. And if someone doesn't want to give, it's okay too. And, you know, they don't have to. We easily let them go, or we give them some people we give them the book for free. Like, if they really want to read it, but they don't have money, for instance, and they took their time and they're sincere, they'd like to take it, then they will, we'll give them the book, and they'll appreciate it. But a lot of people, if they're not interested, they just respectfully decline. And we leave them with a good impression on that. Oh, no problem. Just like I told you, those people in Honolulu, they said they weren't interested, and I respected it. So it's an art how to actually treat each person in a respectful way.
I got your point. No?
Yeah.
Because I have lived 40-odd years in eastern part of the world, from India. This is the culture here. So
yeah.
I can see that what you're talking about is paradigm shift in the city. So yeah. I have to change my psyche now.
Yeah. It's a good question. It's really valid. I appreciate it. Other questions? It's not that we're neglecting the deities, but what we're doing is 100% kirtan. It's the Brihatmadanga. It's a great kind of kirtan. So we're not isolating ourselves from the deities, but we're continuing a very valuable kind of kirtan over here that the deities appreciate. Other questions?
More questions.
From the Sindhu, and we have the Kamali.
What do you do between persons?
Chant. Keep the mantra going always, because that keeps you off the mental platform. Don't look around and let your mind run off, but always keep Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Because when you sell a book, then you think I'm so smart. When you don't sell a book, you think I'm so dumb, I'm unqualified, I can't do this. Don't think either one. Just think Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. And that reminds you all the time, I'm an instrument, I'm an instrument, I'm an instrument. Krishna, if you like, you can send people. And Prabhupada said that when he was coming to do Sankirtan in America on the boat. He was saying, Krishna, you can make these people understand. You can send the right people. How am I going to do this? And we should feel like that every day, like we're catching the Jaladutta to go out there. That's why it's such a high service. Kamalini had it.
Lately I've been getting this comment. People say, I'm above this. You know, they consider themselves very advanced spiritually. And I'm above this. I don't need this. You know, I've already achieved realization.
Then I agree with them. I agree with you. I say, I know. I can tell by looking at it. That's why we picked you out. And this book is not for you. This is to pass on to people who are not so advanced as you. So it's like all the time. Whatever people say, we always honor the objection and take it. I met a guy the other day that knows everything. We went to the door and he came out and he goes, I know everything. And I called all the other devotees and said, you got to get over here and meet this guy. He knows everything. And people say, I always give donations as if, like, now I'm exempt. And I say, I know. I can tell by looking at you. We can tell that you're the donating type. That's how we stopped you.
If you could also touch upon some other objections, common objections.
Okay. Do you have them ready?
I have it from your previous
sessions. Okay, go ahead.
I practice yoga already. if you're presenting it as a yoga book or something.
All these, most of them come into the category of, yeah, I can tell that. It's like, I know, I can see that in you. I can see that, you know, it's obvious you practice yoga. You have a, you know, you look like it, you know, you practice yoga, you have an effulgence. That's why we picked you out. It's like, I know, that's exactly why we picked you out. That's kind of the response.
I'm in a rush, I don't have time.
So when people say, I'm in a rush, I don't have time, we honor it, but I answer it with a question. They say, I'm in a rush, I don't have time. And I say, are you in a really big rush? And then they say, yes. I honor it again, and I said, do you want me to show you really quick? Or do you want me to give you the 5-second version? And then they have a choice. They can say yes or no. So they say, I'm in a big hurry. Are you in a really big hurry? Yeah, I'm in a really big hurry. You want me to show you really quick? And then sometimes if they're really in a big hurry, but they really want to see the book, they'll say, yeah, show me really quick. And then I say, spiritual books, is meant to wake up love for God. These are the ancient yoga books. And it's all just, we're accepting donations for them today. You can give what you can. And then just wrap it up in 5 seconds. But you ask them for permission. Because you can't force somebody, and you don't want to force somebody who's in a hurry and say, no, 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 stop. That's resisting. Whatever you resist persists. So if you honor their objection and ask a question to qualify it, then that's good.
I'm a born-again Christian. I know all this stuff. Yeah.
Okay, so with people who have a designation, I'm handing the book over, and they identify why they're rejecting the book based on the designation. I take the book back and I give them the appropriate book. So I always have an appropriate book. So if I hand over the Bhagavad Gita and he says, he looks at it and says, oh, I'm a Christian here. It comes right back to me, right?
Yeah, I worship Jesus.
Oh, perfect. Here. That one you'll appreciate, Jesus. And then I'll go right to, you know, one who sees everything in relation to the Supreme Lord and sees the Supreme Lord within everything, never hates anything or any being. Whatever it is, the mind has an on-off switch. It's going yes, no, yes, no. So they say, I'm a Muslim, Christian, Hindu, Jew, whatever it is, and then they say, can't take it. I honor that. And I go, oh, my mistake, sorry. Take it back to here, this one. And then I couch it in terms that they can appreciate. Just like someone says, I'm a Buddhist. This happened the other day. Sorry, I'm a Buddhist. They just hand it right back. I can't say, no, 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 take it. Because whatever resists, it persists. So I say, oh, Buddhism. Great, here. Buddha taught that the body is like a house. The soul resides within the house. And the goal of life is to become free from this encagement. And besides that, the Buddha said, don't eat animals that have 4 legs. And I just start saying things that the Buddha said. And then we can commiserate and appreciate. And about 70% of the time, that's just fine. Other people were very discriminating, and they're very designated, and they're very careful about touching anything that will, you know, like, bring the devil to their house or something like that. Then, you know, that may not work, but that's okay. You take it to the next level, next level, next level. And like I said, okay. So designations mean honor the designation, and then replace it with the proper book.
Big one. Is this religion? Or is this about religion?
Is this about religion? Now, it depends how they ask the question. If they say, is this religion? Like, a lot of people think of religion in a disparaging way because it's been presented to them in such a way that it really turns them off. They think of, a lot of times people use the term organized religion. I don't believe in organized religion. I believe in free spirituality. That's what they're really thinking when they say, is this religion, right? That's the question, 90% of the time. So when they say, is this religion? I say, this completely rejects all religious activities that are materially motivated. And it propounds the highest truth, which is reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. That's the second verse of the Bhagavatam. And just to be simple, you know, if somebody like a student or something says, is this religion? I say, no, this is the opposite of religion. Religion tells you what to do. This book shows you how to find out for yourself. That's what they want to hear. They want spirituality to find out for themselves. So, no, religion tells you what to do. This one you find out for yourself. Okay.
This weekend, I don't have cash.
I don't care. We don't take cash. We take MasterCard, Visa, American Express, Carte Blanche, or Diners Club.
And I have no money.
And then, just give a penny. Everyone has money somewhere. It's 90% of the time, it's not true. They have money, and they just don't know how much to give.
and say, I don't have any money, and say, that's all right, just give a little something. And they go, well, I don't have that much. That moves from being, I don't have any money, so I don't have that much. They said, that's right, give whatever you can. I don't know. Well, just give a penny. All right, how about $5? Is that okay? So it moves from that. You can use we have the square, which is a slider, and you can also use PayPal now has their own triangle when it plugs in. You just have to set up an account. You have that, right?
And you usually go with a wireless machine.
You have a wireless machine. So, you know, when we're in a group and someone says, and I say, we take credit card, if they're really into it, they'll go, oh, you do? And I say, yeah, we have our CPA right over here. He handles it. And whatever everybody's holding the machine and said, yeah, he's our CPA, he'll handle it, or he's our treasurer, he'll handle it for you. And then they just do the transaction.
At first I thought you're just saying that to make them laugh.
At first I was just saying that, because it used to happen in the airport all the time that people would say, I don't have any cash, and just to see if it was true or not, we said, that's fine, we take credit cards. And a lot of times they'd say, oh, I do have some cash. But then some people started saying, like, oh, okay, here's your credit card. And then we said, we looked at each other and said, we better get a credit card. And we did, and it works. And if you don't have a machine, you can actually just write down your number. Now, that means that you just have to be very, like people all the time will say, yeah, I have a credit card, all I have is a credit card. And he goes, great, we'll take the credit card. And it's not like I don't hesitate. And even if I don't have a machine, they'll say, great, we'll take the credit card. And where's your machine? Just, we just write it down. And I just pull out my book. Here's my credit card book. I just have it in my pocket. And I pull out my pen like we're ready to go. And they hand it over. And then I just write the number. It's the same thing. It's just not digital, that's all. You just have to be very careful and make sure that you destroy that information after you report it. Don't let it out anywhere. Yes?
I hesitate a lot.
For the credit card?
For communicating with people. What should I do?
Don't hesitate.
Would you say, to practice, like, just keep going, and then eventually you get over it, right? Because they were telling me how they both want to go out all the time, but they don't make it out most of the time, right? So if you just set a schedule, okay, every day or whenever, 5 days, 4 days, we're going out at this time, and just do it. And it just gets easier and easier, right?
I would like to add one more thing about it. Basically, when you say you hesitate a lot, when you say that you hesitate a lot, it has to do a lot of with your personality. It has to be outgoing personality. When I say outgoing personality, it means that you have to interact with the people. Interacting with the people requires a lot of skill. You know, selling is an art. And you are basically going and meeting the people. You're not going to sell, but at least you're going to interact with the people. So you have to be extroverted. So it comes by the practice. It is not that it will not come by the practice. It will come from the practice. So you have to practice, you have to interact, you have to make friends. That's the essential component.
That's nice point. Practice. Also, I've seen lots of introverted people be successful in Sankirtan. I mean, it seems like a foregone conclusion that you need to be a certain way to do book distribution, but you don't. There's one of the early lessons I learned there was a stutterer that joined our temple in San Francisco, and it would take 5 minutes to say one thing, and he wanted to go in Sankirtan. I thought, how's he going to do that? But actually, everyone he stops, he sold the book to. Mm-hmm. They'd stop and they didn't want to go away because they didn't want to insult him. And he would be stuttering through and they would wait. Because he can't, like, I gotta go. You can't go when a stutterer is talking to you. You have to wait. And then also, they ask for the nation. And they, okay. And then. And I remember Naikapa, he came out. Naikapa's not like a really extroverted kind of person. And he sort of mumbles when he talks. And I thought, how's he going to do it? But I'd see him over in the corner, mumble, 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 and people taking books. And lots of shy devotees who are not, you know, it's magical. It's the internal potency. If you have the desire, you know, it's not about a sales technique, really. It's more about your desire to do it, and you'll learn your own way. Prabhupada told the leaders of our party that when they asked him, how should we train people? He said, just teach the devotees to be sincere. And if they're sincere, then he pointed to his heart. And he said, then the master within the heart will show them how to do it. Everyone has their own genius, Prabhupada said, how to do this. And if you're just sincere and you try it, Krishna will direct you how to do it. These things I'm teaching now, it's just a kickstart to show how, you know, there's a system that you can use. And you can use it to get off the ground. But then you can do it your own way and figure out all kinds of ways. And it's okay to, you know, hesitate and do whatever you want. Even if you just walk out the door, it's successful. Bhakti Sam?
Yeah. On that point, I was listening to a Sankirtan lecture by Mother Gauri, who did a lot of books in the 70s and 80s. And she, by her own account, painted herself as a bit of an introvert. And she talked about how when she first was going out, she was struggling because she would, you know, she didn't know how to talk to people, or she felt that there was a gap, but she cultivated a strong desire to want to help them. She cultivated compassion, and she viewed it as like a deep kind of meditation. And over time, she just, Krishna gave her the qualities necessary to attract people in her own unique way, and people would just stop, and she would be very impersonal with them. And she was an all-time famous distributor because of that. So, yeah, just to kind of justify that everybody's personality kind of blossoms in its own way.
Yeah. I took a long time to learn how to distribute big books, and I remember other devotees were doing more books, and sometimes I would cry because it would be so hard sometimes that I'd start, you know, and I'd just pray to Krishna. And then after a while, you just start breaking through in certain ways. Another technique that I used early on, when we first heard about big book distribution, and how some devotees were distributing 40 big books. That was unheard of, really, that someone could distribute sells 40 big books in one day. So when I verified that there was really going on, I got 40 big books, I put them on the shelf, and I sit down and I chant japa to them. And I pray while I'm chanting my japa to Krishna, please show me how to distribute 40 big books in one day. And then he did. Couple more questions? Yeah. Carolina.
Hare Krishna, everyone.
Hare Krishna.
It's muted, sorry.
Okay. Hare Krishna. Before going out, just going out, I think being sincere is the most important thing, and I wrote some notes down. And I feel that everyone is really looking for love, like people showing that somebody cares about them, right? But sometimes it takes a little bit longer, like it can turn into like a 15-minute conversation, but while there's so many other people passing by, how do you show them so much love, like giving them so much love, but in a very short amount of time, so you can still try to go through so many other people?
Well, by using this template, where there's a beginning, middle, and an end, so you have to see where it concludes. You have to find where the conclusion is and then wrap it up and then see. Because you can talk for 20 minutes or 2 hours and think somebody's very sincere, and then they say, but I don't really believe in this stuff anyway, and walk away. I don't really like what you guys are doing anyway. I mean, you can hear some surprise things from people. If you know how you want the conversation to go, you have some parameters about how long you want to go. You can show compassion and love, and at the same time, kind of keep it within a certain time frame, keep things moving along. It's not that hard, and there's not that many time wasters. Most people want to move on. They don't want to stay and talk forever. That's pretty rare, actually. And with those people, then, you know, there's different ways that you can sort of wrap things up in a respectful way. Yeah.
Yeah. Can we try like different ways of mixing ones, like because I'm a musician, and I'm a musician, so like it's a big part of my life since I was like 5 years old. So can we mix it? Like, can I mix like Harinam with book distribution? Because I've noticed like when Harinam is going on, people go like,
Harinam and book distribution.
This is what we're doing right now. This is mantra meditation, right?
Yeah, it's the best combination. When the two go together, then the whole atmosphere gets purified and book distributors feel protected. And they don't know why. Everyone gets the people walking down the street are more in a joyful, accepting mood because the holy name sanctifies the whole area. We just had that in Philadelphia. It was an outstanding yajna we did. We had one sitting party doing Harinam, which was very attractive, a lot of people watching. And then one moving party going around, so the whole atmosphere down the street was getting it. And then we had several parties divided into fours going on different streets, working together. And all day long, I mean, I can say that practically everyone we stopped, I can't think of one person that we stopped that didn't take a book. It was just one of those magical days, and we attribute it to the holy name. So one thing is, when we're doing these book distribution programs and going out, the best thing to do is to create a festival atmosphere, and it doesn't take much. If you get a little corner where you can set up a table, you can have a harinam, you can distribute prasadam, a couple signs, and even a place where you have free meditation lesson. We do that at Santa Cruz, where you put out a rug and a sign that says free meditation lesson, and then people can sit down. It's like Ratha Yatra. You know, Ratha Yatra, people walk up to the book table and what do they say? Which book should I take? That's what they say. And you can create that same environment out in public if you just take a little time to design that and get the vibration going in the right way. It'll attract people in to do it. Okay? Any more?
I just would like to share one experience when I went with Kamalini Mataji's on book distribution on Sunday, and I was distributing the small books, and that time Mataji told me, you should try big books too, the same effort with the big books which is you're doing with the small books. And the next day after, I went with Puneet Prabhu on one of the morning yoga centers in the Toronto University. And that after the hall, everybody came out. So I was trying to give Bhagavatam. And then after one of the teacher, yoga teacher who organized this all, so I seen him and he looked. And I just asked one of his colleagues, like, he's your yoga teacher? He said, yeah. And then I said, hi sir, how are you doing? And he said, I'm good. And I said, you look like a yogi. And he was so impressed. And I gave him Bhagavatam. He came to Bhagavatam. So beautiful, yeah. He gave donation $20, so thanks, Mataji. Like, this is the same effort.
And what did you tell him about the Bhagavatam?
I just tell him, like, this is the book which is very eternal knowledge, which is like tell you that exactly what is the real yoga, its connection, and like the, whatever you are doing, that's also a part of the life and part of the yoga. But still, you are leading this much crowd here, and I hope so you can read in these books and something find out to give them the absolute knowledge. That's what I tell him.
That was my point. But if I can just ask that, by your inspiration, 4 years ago, you know, we started distributing books, and you know, there's a very nice team, a growing team in Toronto. But our observations has been in the last few years, we feel perhaps this is the time when devotees can actually, you know, move up and try more, you know, medium and bigger books. I guess it's fair to say that the focus still, you know, there are a lot of book distributors around us, but at least on the street, the focus is still with the smaller books. And I think devotees are very comfortable doing small books, right? It's very, very easy now. But I think, you know, so just Prabhu, what would be your advice or instruction in that regard? How we can feel confident. I mean, this training is very helpful and we'll continue to do that, but anything else that distributors can keep in mind and feel inspired?
Well, one thing is Prabhupada liked big books going out. One time when he came, all around America, devotees were doing a lot of big books. It was around 1974, big book distribution was expanding rapidly. But one place was in Gainesville. They were doing thousands and thousands of BTGs. Mm-hmm. They were sort of sticking to that idea and not doing big books. So when Prabhupada went there, he was asking, and he used to ask all the time, how many books the center was doing. And they told him, Prabhupada, we're doing about about 20,000 ETGs a month or something like that. Prabhupada said, "No, how many books are you doing?" That's one thing. Another thing is that it's really satisfying to distribute a big book. There's something that is just innately satisfying. It takes a few more minutes and a little more consideration to take a big book. It's a little more of a commitment for people to take it along. And so, once you have the experience that it'll happen when you present it, you'll become more or less addicted to doing bigger books. It's a little more exciting to distribute the big books. And I recommend that you practice it. And if you're not ready right away, you can do what we call core and explore. So your core is whatever you're doing now. And then that means 80%, and then take 20% time to try a new thing. And that goes for trying new lines and distributing in different spots and things like that. Like, you should always have a 20% explore ratio for all the things that you're doing so that you can expand. Otherwise, you get in a rut, and you'll do the same thing over and over again, and you need to move in different areas to become well-rounded and learn how to do things.
One more, on behalf of the team, if you could just maybe touch upon, you know, some of the etiquettes that we can follow. You know, we're talking about, say, we're going as a group, and of course, we surcharge the place with the whole thing, but, you know, like, keeping in mind the prime director, leaving a good impression. So if you can...
Yeah, that's really important, is to notice the overall effect that you're having in an area. One thing is to see how many devotees are in one area so that it's not that, you know, one person is being approached 5-10 times. You know, be aware of the fact that there's people in your area, and someone might be walking down the street and you'll notice that there's three other devotees down there saying, "Hi, hi, hi." And you want to make sure that you, first of all, if you're a leader, you want to space out the devotees in such a way that that doesn't happen. But if you happen to be crowded in with other devotees, make sure that you're not approaching people multiple times. Be aware of that. Don't just be in your own bubble. And the other thing is that you can... I noticed that when other people are distributing, they have their own method and way of doing it. Unless they ask you to, don't interrupt and try to interject your own thing. Like, sometimes new devotees will come out and they'll be really excited and they want to contribute. So an experienced devotee is distributing and they'll come up and they'll start thrusting things at the person and say, "Yeah, and here, take a lollipop too." You know, and by the way, you know, it's just a donation, stuff like that. And it throws the complete rhythm off of the person who's distributing. So you should be a good watcher. And it is good to watch and just see how devotees who are doing it. If you watch a lot of repetitions, and you'll get confidence to see that, oh, people are interested in this. They do like it. They just need a little bit of introduction and careful handling, and then they'll take the books. And it's good to work together as a team, to show up together, to encourage each other, go out together. And when there's a lot of devotees each doing a little bit, you come out with a fantastic result without straining any one person. Finish? Okay. Yes, Vrindavan.
Hare Krishna Guru. Sometimes I see the devotees, in a sense, they seem to devalue the books in the eyes of people, because someone gives a big donation, then they try to give them more books or a bigger book rather than the book that they were actually presenting at the time. Mm-hmm. Is that, do you have any comments on that?
Well, I do it all the time. Because
okay.
I have this penchant for, you know, making sure that people get as much as they can. And I give them extra if they give extra, and then sometimes they give extra. I'm not so much against it. I think that you have to judge each person according to their level of interest and things like that. I don't think, you know, once somebody's actually volunteered a donation, they've already voluntarily given something of themselves, and I feel they're now qualified, you know, to take more. I'm looking for good homes for the books. And, you know, the reason we ask for donation is so that the person does a little austerity so they'll appreciate it. If they give a big donation, they sometimes do that. You have something to add?
I'm just going
to
add that obviously it would be wrong to switch the book out, but simply adding to it is not. But if you switch it out, then it looks like, yeah, you know, why are you switching it out? But certainly adding to it, we've done that a lot too.
Yeah.
A big book, and then we say, oh, okay, here's some small books, and, you know, maybe you have some friends, and give it to gifts as gifts depending on what time, what year, part of the season it is, or whatever. But, yeah, not switching the book out, because definitely that's what
switching down.
Yeah, switching down. You don't, oh, no, you don't want this Bhagavad Gita, take the Krishna book, or whatever, right? So then it puts a doubt in their minds.
Yeah, it does. It one thing is that it all comes out in the wash. My experience is over the years, individually and as a party, when you're liberal in letting the books go out and you don't try to take them back from people or switch them down and things like that, if some people give smaller donations according to what they can afford or what their realization of its value is, and other people give much bigger donations and it evens it out. And over time, we've found as a team, it's hard to distribute all the books we get donations for. Because the more you distribute, the more Krishna provides resources. And then, you know, when you have this liberal feeling that we want to get as many books out, the Lakshmi tends to come in. But what you're saying is a really valid point. In the eyes of the devotee, too, you don't want to devalue the book by giving them to people who really don't appreciate them or want them. And a lot of times, you know, if people won't give a donation or, you know, they obviously give something that's substandard and you can tell they're not attached to it at all, you can even ask them, would you rather I give it to somebody else? And they'll just give it back. They'll say, yeah, no, it's like they're not attached to it. So if it's obvious they're not attached to it and they really didn't make a sacrifice at all or very much, you know, you can ask them that and make that. But one thing we've been doing in Silicon Valley is starting at the top and working down. That is, we start with a full set. Like, I'm getting the emails coming in from the Sankirtan this weekend, and devotees, you know, now if they go to somebody's door and they don't take a full set, they go like, well, they only took, you know, 5 books. Because they start at the top, and it's, you know, it's $220 for a Srimad Bhagavatam set. And if they don't take that, the consolation is, okay, they gave $40, so they took, you know, something else. All right, you know, whatever. We'll move on to the next. But if you start at the bottom, it's harder to move up. You know, if you start with a big book, and you're talking about $10 or $20, then you can always go down to a smaller book, or you know, a lesser kind of a thing. But if you start at the bottom, it's harder to go up to the set.
Any last questions?
Sometimes people say, how much should I give? And so there's some helpful things that you can say. One of the things I say is, there's no minimum. But more importantly, sir, there's no maximum. And then another thing is, I'll just say jokingly, when they're giving donations, I'll say, we try to keep it under $100. But in your case, we're thinking about making it an exception. Anything else?
Through just some words of encouragement, as I was speaking, like, we are really trying to, I mean, we've been doing the monthly Sankirtan festivals, which you guided us to for the last 4 years, almost. And devotees are obviously feeling that once a month is not enough, so they're trying to go more frequently, weekly for sure, and even, you know, a few times a week. So we were hoping that, you know, what's the best strategy so that people don't feel burden like individual, but we can somehow spread it out. And
best strategy is that once a month you have a grand festival where everyone's invited to come out for at least a couple hours and do something and participate in the energy of the Sankirtan. And then if there are other groups of devotees that are feeling really enthusiastic and dedicated to book distribution, they can apportion their time at other weekends and other days of the week when they can go out. And we have that happening, it happens naturally because people get so excited about book distribution they want to go out more. So you can accommodate them, but always keep that one big festival that's for the masses, for lots of people going out, is my suggestion.
Thank you.
keeps the whole temple excited. Can you push that forward a little bit? I'm sure, yeah. I want to keep going, keep going, keep going, keep going, keep going. Oh, here's a couple things. You can go back. Sorry. These are just... Yeah. All right, you know about this? Okay, we covered those. Keep going. Go. Okay. We have last... 2012, we had... I had suggested to the all the temple presidents and the GBCs that we work as a team in North America, not think of individual temples so much, although that's always there, and that together we increase sales, BBT sales by 20%. And so we did that. We started setting goals. Every zone and every temple would set a goal to increase by 20%. Almost everyone participated. And last year we got 28.6% increase in book distribution. In coming off of that, I felt really, enlivened. So I suggested again to the GBC. They said, "Do you think we could really do it again?" And I said, "Yeah, there's a lot of temples that are just getting started, and they can definitely get 20% increase. Let's go for it." So they agreed, and then I presented it again to the temple presidents. And they unanimously voted that they'd go for it. And so we have, every year when we're having a campaign, we have these wristbands. And we'll give them out to everyone who wants them. It gives you special powers for distribution. On it, it says, the first year it said goals are potent, because I was introducing this idea to most of the temples that if you just set a goal, then automatically you start thinking how to reach it. And this year, it's called Tax Your Brain. It's one of the things Prabhupada said about book distribution. Think of the new ways and how to expand it. If you just do that, we'll be able to do it. So these are some, this is using this system of teamwork, what we've done at ISV over the years. You can see the gradual stair step upwards. Go to the next one. Chicago, next one. Philadelphia, and they're going for double this year. Washington, D.C., we haven't had... A phenomenal Toronto. Let's hear for Toronto. 2012, 92% increase. That's a little better than 20%. Next, Los Angeles. They're way up in high numbers anyway, so it's a little harder for them to increase, you know. But last year they got so excited about it, they made a 9% increase, which is by numbers actually bigger than most. Austin. They didn't have anything. Yeah, this is one of your own. And this is one of the results of having trainings and having a strong party. The devotees will split off and then they'll go start a whole other party somewhere else. And this is something to be proud about here. We're going to Austin this year to add a few points to the team. But they're off to a big start last year. So tax your brain. Join the team. And we have this website called SeventhGoswami.com that you can go to. It's got a lot of videos that you can look at about how to distribute books and all kinds of ideas there. And I'll give you all wristbands in just a minute. There it is. You see? It's fun and easy. Everyone say it's fun and easy.
It's fun and easy.
Okay. Thank you very much.
How you going?
Vaishnavibhyo namo.